I think originality is a really interesting concept, right? Because it's actually impossible. You can't come up with a piece of fiction or something that hasn't been done before. It really, to me, comes down to, you know, execution. Like, are you executing it well or poorly? Like, are the choices that you're making serving the theme of what you're trying to do, or are they not serving it?
Hello, salut, bonjour. Welcome to The Lost Bay, a show about indie RPG creators and artists and what's behind their creative processes. I'm Iko. Today, my guest is Leo Hunt, creator of Vaults of Varn, a science fantasy RPG. Varn is a blue desert on a planet orbiting a dying red giant star. The world, at the same time archaic and futuristic, is haunted by the echoes of a mysterious and glorious forgotten civilization. The game system is based on Ben Milton's Nave. Leo is quite a prolific author. He released in less than a year two zines, two Vaults of Varn zines. But actually, before writing the Varn zines, Leo published four novels. I wanted to ask you, you know, you wrote some novels, so I wanted to ask you, what was the impulse that made you write something quite different? And why not a novel? Yeah. I mean, what happened?
But pretty simply, I wrote like a novel a year for like 4 years, and I got completely burned out by it, physically and sort of emotionally, and I didn't write anything for a year. I just completely stopped. I found myself easing back into doing creative writing by, you know, being inspired by like OSR blogs and like the idea that, you know, I didn't have to write a full 80,000 word novel. You could just write a paragraph that kind of like hinted at this world and people still liked it. You know, that was kind of like the big thing for me, is there's different ways of delivering a fictional world. I mean, I thought about doing a Varn novel. I might still at some point, because there's definitely stuff that novels can do that no other form can, right? Like, if you want to really get deep inside a fictional character, I still think it's like the only way. I want to be clear as well, I'm not saying that RPG writing is easier or all writing is difficult. Doing good writing is always hard. It partly appealed to me because it's plotless. So I can come up with a character and suggest things that they might do. But I'm not obliged to spend hours and hours working out exactly how that's going to happen and revising it over and over again, painstakingly, following it to its conclusion. You can just kind of throw out these ideas, develop them a bit. It's better if you leave it a bit ambiguous, because I think it gives people space to go with it themselves, right?
Let's talk about your experience as a game master or player. Can you tell us, I mean, when, how did you start playing role-playing games?
I guess part of the OSR scene or whatever, but I don't have any emotional connection to old Dungeons and Dragons at all. I never played as a kid. I've never played those old editions. I kind of found my way in through Call of Cthulhu. I played as a player with 5th edition D&D a bit, which was my first like proper campaign. And I really, really enjoyed that. But funnily enough, I sort of got frustrated with how the magic worked. So I got kind of interested in like what other kind of magic systems are there in role-playing games, because I know there has to be something that feels more like earthsea or something more kind of freeform and like actually mysterious. And someone suggested White Hack to me. So I read like White Hack and I was like, oh my God, like what is this? This is incredible. And that was kind of my gateway into like OSR stuff. And I ended up finding Nave, Into the Odd, and the whole scene basically. And I kind of obsessively read all that for about a year. And then I started the Varn game.
You are very transparent about your inspirational sources. You even called them at the beginning of the zine, like a theft. What are those sources and what do you feel you took from them?
Yeah, sure. That's a good question. The comment about theft is kind of a joke, because I feel like all art is theft to a degree, right? Like we're all in debt to other things that have like made you want to create in the first place. The big inspiration, obviously, is the art of Mobius. You know, French cartoonist, as I know you're aware. Like that kind of colorful, sort of elegant, slightly archaic but like futuristic as well. It's like an aesthetic that's always kind of really spoken to me, and a lot of the stuff in Varn was me looking at just like his drawings and kind of imagining what that world was, and I'm making my own story from that. The other huge influence is Gene Wolfe, obviously, who's an American sci-fi novelist. And in the 1980s, he wrote a series of four books, which collectively are called The Book of the New Sun. In a nutshell, it's a story set in the very far future of Earth, when the sun has turned into a red giant and is kind of dying. And the narrator is a young man who kind of goes out on this, you know, fairly standard kind of hero's quest across a very, very weird, far, far future Earth that kind of resembles medieval, you know, medieval times. And it's just a book that is, I've never read anything else quite like it, and it's really stuck with me. So some of the phrases in Vaughn are taken from his writing, basically. The third kind of really huge influence, obviously, is Frank Herbert's Dune, which probably won't need any explanation to people who are, you know, who know about sci-fi, but it's another kind of like future medieval sort of story set on a kind of desert planet. So that's obviously there in the DNA as well. I think originality is a really interesting concept, right? Because it's actually impossible. You can't come up with a piece of fiction or something that hasn't been done before. So it really, to me, comes down to, you know, execution. Like, are you executing it well or poorly? Like, are the choices that you're making serving the theme of what you're trying to do, or are they not serving it? And, you know, that's obviously not for me to judge. And the other thing is, which inspirations are you using and how do they complement each other or, like, conflict with each other? Some of my hazy kind of reading about Morocco and Spain is then kind of mixed with Book of the New Sun, with the Mobius drawings, with Dune, a couple of video games and stuff, and that's kind of what comes out is Vaughn, basically.
Vaughn's zines have a slightly psychedelic flavor that I really like and that contributes strongly to building the odd universe of the Blue Desert. Leo did all the art in the zines. If you check the Lost Bay blog, by the way, you find a few drawings he made, and among those, a striking photo of his notepad with early research on the title font.
You spoke about the influence of the French cartoonist Moebius. So you draw and you write the zines. And I was wondering, in the designing process, what came first, like the drawings or the writing?
Very much the writing. I have worked as a professional writer before. Like I've released novels in the UK and in a few other countries through like publishing houses. So I consider myself, you know, a professional writer, I guess. I definitely don't consider myself a professional artist. But I do like drawing. Like, I love cartoons. I did want to be a cartoonist and do graphic novels for a while. I enjoy doing them, even if I don't think I'm always like the greatest at them. So it's for me that I was always going to illustrate it myself, you know. I think in OSR and kind of self-publishing RPGs, there's kind of a love of art that's like not as kind of polished as some of the stuff that you get elsewhere. You know, it's got more of a DIY feel, like a zine feel. And for that reason, I felt, yeah, I can definitely illustrate these myself. I mean, obviously, compared to Mobius, it's not quite up to standard, but you know, what can you do?
Honestly, I mean, I love your art. You develop with the texts, and then there's this constant presence of the drawings that are, they communicate almost on a subconscious level, and they tell so much about the world. I think that's, and yeah, I'm very curious about the house. I mean, how do you draw? I mean, what kind of pen or pencil do you use? Do you write on notebooks or?
Yeah, of course. The process for the art isn't that complicated, really. I draw on Bristol board, or like Bristol paper, I guess. I use quite a light pencil. I do like a rough outline, and then it mainly comes together in the inking. And I use a brush pen with a cartridge, basically, because I'm pretty obsessive about the brush line, like the fluidity and kind of how it can surprise you. I'm pretty set on like analog techniques. I don't think I would ever draw the line work with a graphics tablet, because I want the unpredictability of ink on a page. I'm also slightly anxious, so I don't really like drawing with just like a bottle of ink and a brush, because it's a little bit too uncontrolled. But yeah, the line work's mostly just a brush pen, and then I have like a dip quill pen that I use to do the shading and stuff. I'm looking into like coloring it and stuff, maybe for the next one, but we'll see. I don't know if I'm going to do that yet.
Vaughn is so rich. There's a stratification of races, humans, non-humans, almost human dead bodies revived by sentient mushrooms, objects, technology, mystic gifts, mutations, factions. The game world is so vast, the lore is so deep, that reading the books, I felt very often like I was traveling into a foreign land.
The game world is extremely rich and complex. And did you design it all before starting to write, or at least did you have like vision of the totality of the world, or are you discovering it bit by bit?
Several people who really like the zines have said, you know, that it's rich and complicated. I think that's interesting because I think that largely is like an illusion. It's a deliberate illusion. I don't know if you're familiar with the Dark Souls games, but it's a series of video games. Well, they have this thing where their lore is like very ambiguous and kind of hotly debated among fans. And I think the key thing with Dark Souls is that you find out the lore through fragments. You're never given the whole picture. You're looking around for these kind of bright bits of pottery or something and trying to imagine what the full part looked like. And that's kind of the approach I take with the lore in Vaughn. And I spend a lot of time trying to think of names and details and little things that are going to make you think that there's this whole kind of like world out there. The intention is that it's all thematically resonant and it feels like it adds up to a full part, but you're never going to see the full part. You know, I think it only exists in the reader's mind. There is this whole world out there, but you have to make it. You and the players are making it, right? Because it's like your game. I partly see my job with the zines as these hints. So a lot of the things that are in it, I don't actually know what they are. I'm not saying I just put stuff in randomly, like I know what I'm suggesting with them. You know, because in a novel, people are going to expect some kind of resolution eventually. Whereas your job, if you're writing materials for game masters, is kind of not to provide these resolutions, because I think if something's a closed loop, if it's got an explanation, it's less interesting to people. I think a lot of the joy kind of lies in those unexplained spaces. I kind of see it as empowering. It's like, actually, you made Vaughn. I made it too, but I just gave you the starts. Like, I gave you the sparks.
The game world is sort of medieval and hyper-technological at the same time. Machines are sentient beings, just like the biological ones. Actually, the frontier between the artificial and the biological realm is totally blurred. Even the mighty and extinct gods of Vaughn, the Titans, were artificial but alive, AIs built by humans to be worshipped as gods. But at the same time, the society is organized in a very archaic way, with a very strict hierarchy among the species and within the species themselves. There is in Vaughn this underlying theme of the purity and of the impurity of lineage. Vaughn is an extremely complex universe. It has a lot of depth. Reading the books, I couldn't help but asking myself, what is the foundation of Vaughn? I mean, how can you start writing a planet? What's the first brick of it?
The really early stuff, apart from like the very kind of, was like a very just strong image of like a blue desert. And that was, I was like, oh, what's that? That's kind of interesting. Like, I want to know what that place is. And then obviously that leads me to Dune, like the book Dune. And the thing that really interested me, because it was a really formative book for me when I read it as a teenager, because it had that kind of so far future, it's archaic like vibe. I kind of started with that idea of the pseudo medieval world, but like really far in the future. Well, you know, the medieval world, or our conception of it anyway, is it's very stratified, right? You've got the kind of the tiered society and the pyramid. And I thought, well, okay, well, how does that work? And I started imagining the castes of the Trukin and then the kind of mutants. Yeah, it started with the landscape first and then that kind of idea of this kind of future archaic feudal pyramid. I kind of went from there, basically.
In the first zine, the setting is outlined through random tables for character creation, places, NPCs, encounters, and more. The tables present in both zines are extremely easy and fun to read, and they give you quickly a full picture of the game world and of the lore of Vaughn.
You spoke about like creating like a toolbox for the GM. There are a lot of super interesting tables in the game, and what they do is that they're not only tools; they absolutely create fiction. So I wanted to know how you design the tables.
Yeah, sure. The tables are completely inspired by Yun Suen, which is a fairly popular older like kind of OSR product. Yun Suen is a sort of fantasy China India kind of hybrid, which is pretty much all presented through like tables, just like Van is. I just remember reading Yun Suen as kind of like being a revelation, because I only got into kind of D&D a couple of years ago, and I was reading everything that I could, and I was kind of reading a lot of stuff. It was these imaginary worlds that people had obviously put loads of thought into, and like they were very elaborate. But I just felt like I was reading an encyclopedia. I don't know, this doesn't leave a lot of room for me to imagine things. And then when I read Yun Suen, I was just instantly transported, because there is no definitive Yun Suen. It's just tables. You know, there's no list of like, here's what all the cities in Yun Suen are like. It just gives you a chapter on generating them yourself. And I was enthralled by that. But, and this is the other thing, is that Yun Suen does have a really strong, like, unified flavor as well. The tables aren't just someone throwing stuff at you that kind of makes no sense. They do make a place as well, which is no mean feat. It's quite a difficult, it's not hard to think up, like, 20 results or, what, you know, what something could look like a building. It's a bit harder to think of a ton of results that, like, are kind of different and surprising, but have, like, a kind of cohesive theme to them as well. So like the tables are really difficult to do. The other thing is, I think as you touched on, that the tables aren't accidental. The presence of each one is telling you something about the world. You know, if Vaughn is a blank slate and like you don't know much about it, and the first zine doesn't really tell you a whole lot, you get a little bit of information. But then each table is like a glimpse of what else is out there.
The first Vaults of Varn zine includes the rules of the game, all the necessary tables for character generation, the races, the Truki and the Kakogen mutants, the synths, the micromorphs, and lays out the world. The second issue is centered around a specific setting, the city of Nomon, and gives you all you need to run a full campaign, NPCs, factions, cults, legends. In the desert city of Nomon, water is the main commodity. Although inside the city there's a never-ending water source which is controlled by a powerful water baron. Water has a huge importance. Specific mechanics track water consumption, and almost all major faction and NPCs are somehow linked to the notion of water depth.
So there's, in the second zine, the notion of depth, and more specifically of water depth. It's extremely important. It's extremely well designed, and it has strong implications on the relationships inside the game world between different NPCs and between the PCs and the NPCs. And I'm really curious about how you design this idea of depth and of water being like some form of currency, maybe?
Sure. The water debt, again, is not original to me. Obviously, in Dune, in the society on the desert planet there, like, water is this huge commodity there. It's not the only currency. There's also a video game, which is called Caves of Cud, which I play quite a bit. In Caves of Cud, the currency that your character is collecting is not gold coins like in most D&D RPGs, but it's drinkable water. It's really simple. It's easily understandable. And yet it's completely alien in a way, because, you know, most people in modern societies don't worry about where their clean water is coming from. I'm also very into the work of David Graeber, who's a like anarchist anthropologist who died recently, which is quite sad. But he wrote this book called Debt, which is a huge influence on me. And it's a history of debt throughout like societies and different cultures, kind of showing how like debt exists before money. His argument is it's one of the key foundations of society, and it shows you what they value, and it's what keeps them together. So yeah, in Nomon, you find constantly this idea of debt and obligation, and who owes what to who is always a kind of a live issue in the politics, if you want to dabble in them. A thing that I will apply to my work going forward as well, because I think it's a way that you make this the worlds feel alive, I guess.
I wanted to ask you about David Graeber. I've read Debt, or to be more accurate, I was reading it, and I stopped when he died. I don't know. I couldn't go on
reading
it. Quite sad. And that book had a very strong impact on me. And I, when I was reading about the water depth and all like the ramifications of the impact it has on society, I was thinking about Graeber's book very much. And I think that it's a book like, of course, everybody should read.
Yeah,
and especially every RPG designer or game master should read. I feel like I see and understand the world very differently since I read.
Oh, yeah, me too. If you are a GM or you want to write for RPGs, read that, because like it's just, it will make your imagined worlds like more real, I guess, because it's not just about debt in Western societies. It gives you an overview of debt and obligation in lots and lots of different pre-modern societies, including some that I had never heard of before. You know, I think a lot of Graeber's work as an anthropologist is about value. It's like a cultural thing, right? And if you understand what a culture values, then you start to understand that culture. So if you're making a kind of fictional world or like a fictional place, try and really ask yourself like what they value. From then, how does that affect how they live? Because that's kind of, I think that shows that what a culture values is not a neutral question. It kind of goes to the heart of who they are. But no, I did have the pleasure of meeting David Graeber once, though. He was very nice. I met him in a bar. It was completely by accident, and we talked about Batman, which is a nice memory of him.
It's common for RPGs to have a specific vocabulary like names, monsters, gods, but in Varn zines, there's a full language. Even objects of the common Varnish daily life are named, and they very often appear in the text without any explanation, like any other normal term. Words like nanomachines or language virus or sky-seeking stone, at the same time exotic and familiar.
There's very rich and complex vocabulary. And what I found sometimes is that I didn't really understand or I didn't really remember what some made-up names, but somehow on a preconscious level, I felt like I was understanding the meaning of the thing. I didn't have like to go back to a dictionary. And I was wondering, do you have like a technique or a method for creating like new vocabulary, new words, or how do you craft the words you use in the game?
I think my advice for people who are like looking to make up words or like whatever is that like actually you usually don't have to make one up. Normally you like the English, like if you're writing in English, which you know obviously I am, the English language has a lot of words and most of them people don't ever use. There's a long, long kind of trail of like words that go back to Latin roots or like Old English. So most of the weirder words in it, they're not just made up out of whole cloth. They're usually drawing from either archaic like English words or like Latin roots. Oh, I think of an example. There's a monster called the chromivore, right? They're one of the weirdest creatures. They're like this cloud of like living color that sucks the color out of other animals and just like kills them. And there's all kinds of things you could call a creature like that, but it's called a chromivore. And the reason's really simple. It's just Latin and it just means color eater. And then people read it and they're like, okay, I don't know what chromivore means, but like I kind of get it. And so this thing eats color or like light. I don't make up a word unless you absolutely have to. And I'm usually looking for like meanings that already exist or have been forgotten.
In terms of design, of game design, in the second zine, there are factions and major NPCs described. And the very interesting thing is that each faction and each NPC is described as potentially an ally of the players or of the player characters or an antagonist. That's really interesting. It gives a lot of room to the referee or game master or whatever we want to call them. And also somehow it says there's no true villain, right? So I just wondered if you wanted to talk about that choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I took it from a scenario that I read online for the RPG Delta Green, which is a kind of like conspiracy Call of Cthulhu thing. As with all Delta Green scenarios, there's like an evil conspiracy. But who the kind of evil one is kind of like up to the GM. And it gave you these six fairly detailed NPCs. And then for each one, there was like a normal version and a corrupted, like evil version. So that was kind of what I tried to do with the faction leaders. And they're almost the same character. The antagonistic one is a kind of slightly darker take on the original character. It was a really interesting exercise because it definitely forced me to think about the NPCs I already used, because the Water Baron is supposed to be the villain and he is in my campaign. But I had to think really hard about how he could be like an ally. But I would say that like try and do it in stuff you're writing if you can, because this is a strength of RPGs that you can't get from a novel, right? It kind of like really hammers home that it's a game to be interacted with. And it's also a game that like the GM is exercising authorial control themselves over. So to really make that job easy, give them NPCs. But, you know, also if you can, like, try and think about the dark side or the light side of that NPC. Could this friendly person be an antagonist? Yeah, probably. What one thing about them would you change to make them kind of less appealing, you know? When you're writing an RPG supplement, which is, you know, what these are, even if they're not huge ones, it's a funny kind of writing because it's not like, obviously it's not a novel. You have to look at it as a kind of a recipe book, like a toolbox, and kind of like just a source of inspiration. So like there has to be like the craft of fiction in it. And you have to put a vivid picture into people's minds. But you can't present stuff that's static and fixed, right?
Leo published recently on his blog a post on the Lamigator, a monster of Varn. It's some strange symbiome between an alligator and a shell of living and sentient plastic. He was inspired by the sight of plastic bottles floating in a pond. As Leo keeps writing, the world of Varn continues to grow.
The idea is that I'm going to continue doing the zines. I think there'll be about 7 or 8 in total. I'm sure that's going to come back to bite me. And the idea basically is that they're going to be looking at different geographic locations. So yeah, the further issues will be more like the Norman issue in that they give you a new location for Varn, basically. So issue 3 is going to be about like the deep desert, the Sahara, just never-ending sand dunes, the cultures and creatures that kind of survive out there and how they do it, desert navigation, a little bit of getting lost and like weather, stuff like that. There'll be one about the coast of Varn, the sea, ocean travel, kind of giant ruins half submerged in the water. There'll be one about a kind of like toxic waste kind of dump, the classic video game poison swamp with the kind of science fantasy twist. The mountains and a couple of other locations, but that's the idea, kind of themed by region. And then if you collect them all, you've kind of got the whole place. That's the idea anyway.
That was Leo Hunt, creator of Vaults of Varn. You can download the zines from itch.io or buy physical copies of them. I'll put the links to the stores in the show notes and on the Lost Bay blog. Leo is also working on another project, Blood Heist, a full RPG in a world dominated by vampires. You play as thieves doing a heist. The Blood Heist book just finished a successful Kickstarter. I'll add the links in the notes too. The Lost Bay is a podcast about indie RPG creators and artists and what's behind their creative processes. It's produced by me, Iko. The editing is by Laura Elle, and music is by Avery Isles. To get updates about upcoming episodes, you can find me on Twitter at The Lost Bay or on Blogspot, thelostbayrpg.blogspot.com. And thanks a lot for listening. Salut!